Greetings, my lovely friends. It's me, Duncan, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And today, I have a very special guest. I don't know if the DTFH would even exist if not for Natasha Leggero. We started podcasting together long before anyone thought that podcasts would ever be a thing. If you're a purple pope, you already know that we had a podcast called The Lavender Hour. We went separate podcasting ways, and now Natasha and Moshe Kasher, her brilliantly funny husband, have an awesome podcast called The Endless Honeymoon Podcast, which I hope you'll subscribe to. Also, Natasha just wrote an incredibly funny book called The World Deserves My Children. It's available now wherever you might look for books. The audiobook is narrated by her and Moshe. I love audiobooks, so I'd say just order both of them. Before we jump into the episode, I'd love to invite you to join my Patreon. It's patreon.com/DTFH. When you sign up, you're going to have access to commercial-free episodes of the DTFH. If you want, you can also hang out with us twice a week. We've got a family gathering and a meditation just about every week. But even better, you can connect with the thriving, brilliant community that is the DTFH family. That's a Discord server away from your sweet, sweet eyeballs and fingers. If you're a YouTube person, I'm excited to announce that pretty soon you'll be able to listen to episodes of the DTFH on YouTube. And also, video episodes are on the way, but it's going to take some time. I'm still working on my studio. It's very difficult to get marble spider sculptures from the quarry that has the type of marble that I'm interested in, but it's coming soon. Now, everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH, Natasha Leggero. Natasha, welcome back. It's so nice to see you again. How you doing? You're out there in New York promoting your new book. Congratulations. What an accomplishment.
Thank you. You know, I'm staying at this hotel and I was like, I've been here before. And then I'm like, wait, this is the old Trump Towers. Like, oh, it used to be like the Trump Soho, and now they just slapped another name on it. But then when I'm calling people from the hotel, they're saying it says Trump on it, and I bet he still owns it.
Oh, my God. Of course he does. Yeah, he definitely does. Is it nice? But is it a nice hotel? That's all that matters.
It's so nice. It's like so much taller than every building in Soho, and you get to see like the entire city. It's insane. But I don't want to do a free plug.
How glamorous. How incredible to be in some nice hotel promoting your first book. I mean, writing a book, what an accomplishment. That alone must feel so good to know you have it in you to write a book.
You know, everyone keeps saying that, but don't you feel like life, you're just always kind of chugging away?
Yes. Yeah.
It's really hard to take that time to stop and like appreciate anything. I want to learn how to do that. Maybe I should try to meditate like you.
Maybe
I should try to learn to meditate once a week like you.
Once a week ain't bad. I mean, the more you meditate, the less all the hangups about it start falling away. Even if it is sporadic, your relationship with it goes from being another thing you use to make yourself feel bad to something a little lighter than that. You know, like meditation should not be, you shouldn't add that to the list of things you didn't do. You know, it's your friend. So it's just something that's there for you, not something to whip your back with. There's plenty of other things that you're not doing that you should feel bad about. not meditation.
Do you think anyone doesn't whip their back?
Yeah, totally. There, you could stop. You actually don't have to keep whipping your back. It's so great. It's like, it's so exciting about life is that if you don't want to keep, like, if you're, you know, your belt is growing thin or your arm is sore or your back is just the calluses or you can't even feel it anymore, you could actually just stop doing it. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Have you?
Oh, no, I still give myself a firm lashing here and there, but definitely, you know, much less than I used to. You know, I only whip myself like in the mornings before, but it's, you know, if I do give myself a lashing, it's a lot softer than it used to be. And I don't know if that's nice. Part of getting old, maybe your arm's weaker, so you can't quite get the like snap in that you used to, but I think it's a possibility that you don't have to all like do that as much. What about you? Are you still whipping your back?
Oh yeah. All the time. Every time I look in the mirror, every time I do a press thing, it's like, it's very hard to not do that. I mean, I also, you know, I don't do it constantly, but it definitely is in the loop of what my brain does naturally, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a habit. It's just a habit. It's like any other habit. No big deal. Habits can seem so intense and like, oh my God, that's who I am. But yeah, it's just a habit. People are just habituated to like, you know, they internalized one parent or the other usually. And then that, whatever that little pattern is, just repeats every single day like it used to when you're a kid. It's just part of the thing. But yeah, it's just a habit. It's like no different from any other addiction.
Our kids don't do it.
Exactly. I mean, that's what's so great about having kids is you're like watching a being that has yet to internalize whatever neurotic patterns they're going to like pick up from you. So it's like, it's cool to see the blank slate and like what that looks like. It's wonderful.
I know.
And you have written a lovely book about parenting and being a new parent. And
well, it's funny because on this book tour, I was going to tell you, I keep quoting your mom. Because
wow.
The story of my... You know, you kind of have your thing that you're saying in all the press. And, you know, one of the things I remember is like your mom saying, you know, it's the most, you love this thing so much. It's like you are cracked open, you know, and
yeah,
and it's just this like amazing love. And so as I quote her, I say that, but then I, you know, people would always say, and it wasn't just your mom, but I remember your mom had a very specific thing, you know, that I just said, but
yeah,
what people don't tell you is that you could almost as easily replace love with fear, at least for me as a mom, like you will right. never, when they say you'll never know the kind of love that you get from a kid, like you could replace that with fear. And it really is true because I was someone who just had like so much joie de vivre and I would just go to Paris, go to Africa, you know, last minute, you guys want to come to Thailand for some stage time and free shrimp and, you know,
yeah.
Oh, hey, whitewater rafting with no helmet. You know, I would just do
yeah.
anything. I was down for it all. And now, you know, all of a sudden I'm not like that anymore. And,
yeah.
you know, this book is like a lot of me examining, like, who is the pre-motherhood Natasha? How can I get back to her? But then, you know, you think about it, because I wrote this book for many years, for 3 years, because there was the pandemic and then there was a paper shortage.
Yeah.
And it was just like a lot of things that kind of slowed it down. But I started to realize, like, we don't have kids to stay the same. And maybe it's not about getting back to your pre-motherhood days, you know, it's how do you integrate it? And especially people like me and you who are having kids later in life when our lives are more fully formed and these kids are joining our, you know, fully made lives. So
right.
It's a different thing than what our parents sort of were just like, you know, would meet some guy, have kids, and then realize that was the wrong guy and then get divorced, you know? I mean, I didn't even know people who didn't have a second family.
Right. Yeah. Divorce boom. Yeah. Well, you know, and also, you know, within that was like, there was this sort of, I think in our parents, this frivolity, this like a real cultural selfishness that appeared for a while as a kind of trend, which is, you know, just divorce. I mean, if it's not working out for you, just get a divorce.
You think that's frivolity?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, my mom was getting backhanded.
Well, that's different. I don't mean that. And I don't mean all the people who were in abusive, like truly abusive, brutal situations. Those, you got to get out. No question about it. But I do think that some people in their marriages applied the same kind of philosophy in their marriages they did at dating. You know, the same thing of like, oh shit. Like, you know, when the person sees your shadow and you see their shadow, you're out. Kids or no, I'm out. But sometimes the shadow is slapping you, in which case it's like, no, I'm out. Like, you got to get out. So I don't mean like, no, stay no matter what. That's crazy. Only lunatics do that.
You're saying that you think that some people could like, have been less selfish. And I mean, of course I would love to like go to bars in New York and have sex with anybody I want and like do my thing. It's like, but you have this like responsibility to your family to like,
yeah,
you know, or Moshe, he wanted to go to Burning Man and open up our relationship. And I'm like, no, we're not gonna, you know, and I think we figured
that
out.
That must have been a rough conversation.
Well, I know what you mean, though. It's like it is easier to just be like, if you didn't have kids, everything would be easier.
And that's what I'm saying is like people equate easiness with good. Like that's desirable. Easy is desirable. Easy. Isn't that what you want? Easy. And I understand that. And, I think that if you like both of us got to experience so much of that easiness that at some point, you realize that you're not getting the whole picture here. You're just getting part of the picture of like, oh my God, I can go to wherever, or I can go to Costa Rica, or go to Burning Man, or go to this or that, all this stuff. And you can get incredibly hedonistic and you start like just going for it all the time. You think you're going for it, but you know, whatever that is, when you achieve the peak of the, you know, it's the peak of the thing, whatever your dream was, you start realizing like, oh, this doesn't really feel like much. And that's, you know, then what, you know? So I think, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but what do you call someone who studies snakes, Natasha?
Oh my God. I don't know.
Anyway, a goth. I think you call them a goth. But the
is that a joke?
That's a bad joke. How goths always have snakes. But if they say if a snake half sheds its skin, it dies. If a snake doesn't shed its skin, it dies. Like it has to shed its skin. And becoming a parent is for sure the shedding of a skin. Like you got to get that. You have to let go of that. It's torture at first, you know, especially if you manage to have some kind of like intense freedom and intense lack of schedule or an intense like autonomy. You know, it's easy in the midst of all the things that suddenly you have to deal with and your single friends being like, well, you want to come out tonight? You're like, what are you talking about? I can come out. You think I can just come out? I had a baby sitter. What are you talking about? It hurts. It hurts until you really let it go. And then it makes it easier, but at least you don't have that ache of what could have been.
How do you let it go?
How do you let it go?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question. I think first by acknowledging that you're hurting because you're missing your old life, not feeling guilty mm-hmm. about that, making sense. Like, of course I'm missing the old life, you know? But then finally,
it's not even that I miss my old life. I miss the person who wasn't like constantly thinking of what the worst thing could happen for a child and making sure to take all of the steps to make sure it didn't happen. I mean, that takes a lot of mental energy. And granted, we're just coming out of like global trauma.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that really made it way worse for me.
Yes. And I think this is a, I mean, I don't want to get into some like gender discussion, but you know, in my observation of Aaron versus me, I do feel like the mother, you know, the children go to Aaron when they're really sick. You know, it's like, and I remember when I was a kid going to my mom when I was really sick, you know, not my dad. It wasn't my dad that I was seeking the motherly maternal love from in those situations. And I don't know if that's, I'm sure that's not across the board, but I think it makes me think that being like clearly being a mother physically, just physically is like is so much more intense than being a dad. Like, we just have to come. You've got to turn.
And I mean, it's your favorite thing to do.
Exactly. We just do our favorite thing. And then you have to like physically just get torn apart. Permanently sometimes.
Ravaged. You know? Degraded.
Ravaged. Degraded. Yes. Yes. And we have to like, you know, watch this happen and, you know, try to support if we can, but there's just no way around it. It's like, I'm sorry, but me going to like CVS to get Erin the many things she might need during pregnancy or post pregnancy is never going to be the same as watching my body warp itself and all that combined with the responsibility. Like, you have a beating heart in your stomach. The most, you know, the responsibility to keep that part, just that alone. I mean, not
and,
even talking
and then
about,
it comes out, you know, and the stakes are just so high. And I don't, you know, you can always get another boyfriend, get another husband, but it's like, the stakes are just like incredibly high.
The highest. I mean, the highest on every level, right? I mean, socially high. Is there any, like, you know, at the end of when someone passes away, regardless of their accomplishments, if somewhere in there you hear, and they were a rotten dad, rotten mom, you remember the rotten mom. You remember the rotten dad before you remember whatever other shit they did. It's so, it's such a sacred thing to suddenly find yourself in this situation. So, so sacred and important and real.
But also, I mean, aren't people doing the best they can? You know, it's like, it's like, or maybe they're not. I don't know. It's like,
I think they are. I like that you said that. I think they are. I think that's, and do you find that like being a parent has sort of shifted your way of thinking about your parents and your childhood?
Well, you know, I think it's such, I am having such a different experience than my mom. My mom had me when she was 23, and then she had two more kids like immediately after that and had an abusive husband. And then, you know, the relationship dissolved by the time I was 4. Mm. And my, you know, brothers were younger than me. And then she was just alone, as opposed to, you know, alone with no degree, no job, 3 Jesus. Kids, abused. You know, I'm like someone who's in their prime I was able, and that's what's so cool right now for women. And I just really am trying to get the word out. And, you know, I know people know about freezing your eggs, and 38 is kind of the cutoff for egg freezing. But, you know, I was able to have 2 more decades than my mom. I had my baby at 43. of like my peak earning years, my peak having fun years, my peak, you know, getting to know myself years. And then I'm able to have the baby. So, you know, and that's because of technology, which I thought I hated, but you know, I think this is like really great technology because it's just going to keep more women in the workforce and more women, you know, hiring people and more women creating. And, you know, the more we have women in power and in creative positions, the more, you know, just the better society is.
Being perpetually on the brink of what appears to be some global catastrophe isn't exactly what you'd call sexy, which is why I am incredibly grateful for today's sponsor, Blue Chew. I'm sorry, but I'm just not one of those people that gets turned on by an impending nuclear war, which is why sometimes I need the help of my dear friend, Blue Chew. Blue Chew, it's a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. You sign up at bluechew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers. Once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy surrounded by coughing, sneezing people. No. It comes right to your door. Even better, Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped directly to you in a discreet package. These things are the real deal. I would not recommend them to you if I had not tried them many, 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 many times. This needs to be not only in your medicine cabinet, but in the medicine cabinet of whatever shelter or bunker you're getting ready for whatever may be on the way. Look, you're going to want to propagate the species. You're going to want to spread your DNA into history. And once whatever happens, happens, I don't know how many people are going to be classically turned on other than the weird bikers that are running things. This is why Blue Chew is not just critical to your day-to-day sexual health, but also to the survival of our species. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, chew it and do it. Have better sex. We've got a special deal for our dear listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use their promo code Duncan at checkout. You just pay $5 shipping. That's bluechew.com, promo code Duncan to receive your first month free. Visit bluechew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast.
I'm really happy that I was able to, I mean, I know this sounds cliche, but you know, have it all in a way, even though I am feeling like very haggard, but
yeah, well, you don't seem haggard, Natasha. And, but I, it's exhausting. I mean, you're to do what, you know, you are in like you're in a power couple. You're both your professional comics. There's so much time that has to be invested into that pursuit. And, you know, adding to that, this incredible responsibility of raising a kid, how are you balancing? How are you finding the balance there?
Well, I definitely made a decision that I was only going to have one kid. And, you know, because I barely wanted one. And then when I had one, Moshe is like best friends with his brother. So he was always like, we have to have two kids so they can be friends. That's you right. Know, I don't know where I'd be without my brother, but you know, I really just kept telling him no. Right. I go, unless you want to be the point person, I'm good with one. And you know, I grew up with a sibling that kind of ruined our family almost in a way. Like he was like a bad child and caused a lot of pain and a lot of stress and pretty much traumatized our whole childhood. You know, it was all about him all the time. And then my mom was just always upset. So I think that for me, I'm kind of scarred by that. And I have one amazing child who's so cute and sweet. I mean, granted, she's only four, but that's good. And then I can travel lightly and I can like go to Japan with her if I want to, or if I need to take her into a green room. I mean, you can't take three kids into a green room.
You can if you're Jim Gaffigan.
Does he do that?
I don't know, but it seems like probably at some point, I'm sure he took his beautiful family into a green room. I don't know. So it's like you have found your own sort of like what works for you and what you want. It's wonderful. You know, I love that. It's very empowered. You've always been like that. That's great.
Well, thank you. I heard this quote. I don't remember who said it, but they said one is an accessory, two is a lifestyle. And I do feel with one, I can just move through the world and in a way that's not going to totally overpower me.
Right. You still like, you know, you still, and like, I think that sort of like that's a big part of it, right? It's like looking at what is the dynamic here? You know, what's going on with my particular tribe? How does it work? What does it work? And if you have a sort of modern situation happening where like both parents are professionals, it's, you know, don't lie to yourself about, you know, what's going to happen when you have another kid or another one or whatever. Like you have to like be very honest with yourself about that. It's good that you were able to say no in that situation, knowing like, look, who does this? Who's going to do this? You're working, I'm working. How does it work with another one? That's good.
As soon as I had the baby, I went to the dentist and he was like, you need to have another one now. One child is not a family.
Fuck you. Just clean my teeth. Fuck you. Who asked you?
But I will say, like, you know, just like thinking about having to like pack the lunches and feed them breakfast and, you know, make dinner every night and it's like, and clean the house and have a career. It's like, it's so much to do all the time. It really makes me question like why we all live in these individual houses with just our family. Like,
right.
We should all be buying like acres of land. I'm not saying we all need to live together, but like, wouldn't it be amazing to live with like four or five families on like a few acres and then there's like a mess hall and then like each person makes dinner like once a week or something.
Right.
And then there's a place for all the kids to play.
There's a gun range.
Right. This is how Nexium starts.
There's a bunker. Yeah. There's a bunker. There's a father figure, you know, like it's great that you have the individual dads, but nice. It would be nice to have a representative for all the dads. You could call him father, maybe a mother figure for all the moms. You call her mother. And then those confusing moments, they tell you the right thing to do. That would be wonderful to have that. Yeah, that would be wonderful. I know what you mean, though. I mean,
it's a lot of pressure. It's like so much every day for one person. And it's like, I don't know, during the pandemic, we potted with another family and we had like everyone would make dinner one night, you know, and then it was just like, and then the kids would all play together. I don't know. It just felt like, I wish we could live. I mean, it started to get, you know, hard to do that.
But. Yeah, no, when you were telling me about that, honestly, I was just thinking that looks like hell on earth. I don't want to pod. I don't want to pod with the Gibsons or whoever. No thanks. But I appreciate the, like, that y'all try that. But I do know what you mean. I mean, like, the you know,
it's wasteful.
It's wasteful. But also you sort of like I think there's all these like hard, depending on how you were raised, there's all these like really intense lessons the child brings you, not through like telling you stuff, but just through experientially all the stuff you always heard that if you're a single person or you're just dating or whatever, you can kind of like shrug off like the importance of community, you know, the importance of connections to your family, all these things that are like really old ideals of like how to live suddenly become so important because you can't do it by yourself and you can't outsource everything. Like your kids need, you know, some contact with family members, some sense of like a wider circumference than just, you know, you and your partner. Yeah. So yeah, I know what you mean. Like, and I've felt the call of the commune before. It's just, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. It would be rotten. I just couldn't. I don't know how you guys did. How long did you pod for?
Oh, just a couple months.
Oh, I couldn't do it.
Think the pandemic made you guys closer as a family? Because I was definitely planning on outsourcing at least 40 to 50 hours a week to a nanny so I could work because my kid wasn't in school then. But then when the pandemic happened, we all of a sudden were all together all the time and, you know, eating lunch at the dining room table every day for a year and a half or 2 years. I mean, and dinner and breakfast. It's like,
yeah,
it's so much. But I do think it really made us closer. And
for sure.
In a way that is like palpable and also is going to last.
Yeah. It was a forge. And you know, it either broke relationships or it like turned them into some kind of meteorite. You know, it's like we got through that together. Mm-hmm. We did it. And it wasn't easy. And there were, I don't know about you two, but fuck, it's not like it was smooth sailing all the way through.
Smooth at all. I was like in my office just Googling like every single, you know, article, reading everything I could because there was no one telling you what to do. So you had to like study science and aerosol BPMs or whatever. Like I was just like constantly stressing.
Yeah. So you have this like, you know, once in a generation event mixed in with a once in a lifetime event mixed, you know, all the stressors of just, you know, new kid, new parents combined with isolation, combined with social disruption. I mean, you know, before we left LA, we were living this, thank God we got so lucky. We were in this wonderful little compound, yard, a pool. We were so lucky. But you know, one of the nannies, we had a nanny who, because LA was like so insane, she like was like telling us that I can't remember where she was from. But she was like telling us that she'd left that place because it had gotten too dangerous. And now she was in a place that felt the same way. And she was showing us where the like parts of the fence surrounding our house could be compromised and like wrapping rope and chain around it to lock it up. That was our.
What?
Well, don't you remember like when LA really started, like when all the encampments sprung up? And the like Skid Row masticized when Skid Row spread through the whole city and the, you know, there would be these fires from the encampments under the, just, you know, burning into the sky. And there were all the protests and all the like, it was insane there for a second. It was insane. And then earthquakes, it felt so apocalyptic. Like,
oh, and remember we had a curfew?
And the curfew and the, we didn't know what it was at first. That was the other thing. It's like, mm-hmm. What is it? Is it smallpox? What's the fatality rate of this fucking thing? What is it? Like, it was terrible. Is it on your groceries? Like, what is it? It was so confusing. So there was just this perfect recipe, wasn't there, for like, for not making things work in a relationship with a new kid. It was the perfect recipe to shatter a relationship.
I know. I know a lot of people who got divorced.
Yeah. I mean, it's like just day-to-day life's hard enough, but suddenly you're in The Walking Dead. Like, my God. My God. My God. Well, but you guys did it, and that's so great. It's over. It's over. Yeah, it's over, and we learned a lot of stuff. And so, okay.
Oh, you know what's really bad, though? Our kids weren't even that traumatized. I think, like, imagine a fifth grader who's now in, like, a freshman in high school, and they just missed middle school. Or a sixth grader, you know? It's like, my whole personality was developed in middle school. There's people who missed a lot of high school, like 3 years of high school. And then 1 year of remote high school, it's like they barely went to high school.
You know, I just can't even imagine how kinky these generations are going to be. Like, it's going to be.
Why?
Well, because, like, you know, within the pandemic, there was like a kind of like a medical BDSM happening. You know what I mean? Like all these restrictions, and you had to wear some shit on your face, and like, you know what I mean?
You think that like, oh, because like, right. My friend who was a dominatrix told me that like her husband was into boots because he used to live in Chicago where all his mom's friends would come over in their boots right when he was starting to get hard-ons and jerk off.
There you go.
So like for him, he likes boots and like he wants like, boots to be stepping on him. He wants to see them. He wants to touch them. Yep. So you think that it's like because when people were coming of their sexual age, they had to like cover their face.
Yeah.
They're going to want like a ball gag in their mouth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel so sorry for Duncan. Nurses. I feel so sorry for anyone who has to like professionally wear a mask. You know what I mean? Like there's going to be a lot of dentists. There's going to be a lot of like doctors. Who are like trying to do their work and like just like weird 20 somethings with like obvious erections. They're like, I'm sorry. I don't know why, but the masks just turn me on. You know, it's going to be that. Our next partner has a product that I love. I started taking Athletic Greens because I'm not one of those vitamin people. I don't want to spend every morning alphabetizing my vitamins, putting them in a Ziploc bag, carrying them around. I don't want the vitamin pukes that happen when you don't eat enough food and you take too many vitamins. And the next thing you know, you're spraying a multicolored spray of chemicals all over the backseat of your Uber or your couch. No, that's not for me, which is why Athletic Greens is the ultimate supplement for me. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you are absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All the things. When I'm slurping back Athletic Greens, I can hear my atoms sing. I can hear my gut biome rejoice as they cheer the sweet tasting, powerful supplement water falling down into my intestines. It's delicious and it makes you feel great. Even better, it costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health. It's cheaper than cold brew. Also, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. And it's way cheaper than getting your hip replaced when you get so malnourished and vitamin deprived that you fall off your gaming chair and shatter your hip or your knee. You're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. It's recommended by professional athletes. I'm one of them. And it's trusted by leading health experts such as Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially headed into cold and flu season. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you got to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Duncan. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Duncan to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Thanks, Athletic Greens. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a lot of dentists. There's going to be a lot of, like, doctors who are, like, trying to do their work and, like, just, like, weird 20-somethings with, like, obvious erections. Or, like, I'm sorry. I don't know why, but the masks just turn me on. You know, it's going to be that. Truly, it's we can't even imagine what.
That is crazy, Duncan. And only you could think of something like that.
Look, it's coming. I mean, like, not only that, here's the other thing I've thought of, and I'd love to hear what you predict these generations are going to be up to, but the other thing I know is going to happen, like, remember how the 80s parties, which I always hated, people would have those fucking 80s parties? Mm-hmm. Hated 80s parties. There's going to be pandemic parties, like when the thing is kind of a distant memory, where you come in, there's like a fake COVID test or something, and like... You know, it's like some of them are set to like test positive. If you test positive, you've got to go into quarantine. You know what's going to happen, Natasha. What do you predict is coming?
Well, I wanted to ask you that actually because, you know, part of writing my book is like, you know, the world deserves my children because only the idiots can, you can't just let the idiots have kids. You know, we need to create, because I was thinking, as I wrote it, I had read before, like, there's certain cultures that have kids not for this generation, but for five generations in the future. And, you know, they're right. Thinking of, like, way in advance. And so if you think about it like that, even though there is going to be coastal change in our kids' lifetime, and, you know, there's racial inequality and nuclear war and the robots are coming, I mean, there's, like, endless things to be worried about. It still is like, okay, but you can't just let the idiots have kids. What's going to happen to the world? But then I start thinking, isn't that a lot of pressure to put on our kids? Like, wait, so they're just supposed to be the liberal warriors that save us from, like, who the only people who believe in science? Like, when I was a kid, I just wanted to, like, make out with my boyfriend and listen to music and, you know, climb out of my bedroom window.
Well, I think we got to drop. I think this is the problem. Here's a problem with it all could be true. And if that's not our kids' job, you pressuring them with all that shit, for one, it's like, that's not going to help anything. Like, you, when you think exactly what you're saying, it's important to, like, get to, for them to have their childhoods, you know, and get to be, like, unencumbered by the burdensome realities of living on a planet. And this is a very unstable situation on this planet through history. It's been unstable. I think you and I had a nice run. You know, like, we got a nice run. But if you sort of look historically at, like, what's been going on here, it's always fucked up. There's world wars, civil wars, mm-hmm. bubonic plague, many ice ages, all kinds of, like, you know,
but isn't global warming getting worse, and isn't nuclear war becoming more of a possible reality?
Nuclear war is the same, I think, possibility. It's the moment we figured out to split the atom and decided to drop nukes on Japan, we opened up a Pandora's box that will never close. Like, it's always there. Always there in the background, along with, like, I mean, everyone's like, oh fuck, the nuclear war thing. It's like, you don't even know what they've got now. I mean, they figured out how to split the atom and invent those bombs in secret. You think they'd stopped all of a sudden? They're like, okay, let's stop trying to make super advanced weapons that give us global dominance and make us a superpower. They didn't stop. They're still working on shit. Who knows what? So not only is the weapons we know we should be afraid of, it's the weapons we don't know we should be afraid of. As far as, like, climate change goes, my God, just look look back. That I was just reading about this. I can't remember when it was. There was one summer, I don't remember the year, where it wasn't summer. It was winter everywhere, because I think of a volcanic eruption just threw ash into the air and like cooled everything down. I mean, and also I just finished watching Graham Hancock's Ancient Apocalypse, which is so good, on Netflix, sort of like pointing out this like time, I think 11,800 years ago, when like sea levels rose instantaneously and then everything froze because of a theoretical meteor impact, which hit the Greenland ice sheet. So I think like regardless of current carbon emissions and all that, even if like everyone just, you snap their fingers, all the cars become non-carbon emitting cars, all the environmental stuff went away, the oil executives all like drink ayahuasca and they're like, I'm not doing this anymore. And we figured out how to turn plastics into like something that we could grow food. Like regardless, no matter what, like if you sort of look at the history of planet Earth, it's constantly getting smashed with meteors and unknown chaos variables that shift everything. So the narrative.
I've got something. Okay, go ahead.
I'll wrap it up. I'm sorry for that. The narrative of we are the saviors of the Earth and now is the time. Is always been the narrative, no matter what. If you were born on planet Earth, that is part of the reality. Is if you're an adult, yeah, it's your job. You've got to drive the bus. Bad news, you can't sit in the back of the bus anymore. But I don't think it's a new, it's not new. I think we've been, this is the story of being an adult, isn't it? Like you've got, you're now, you're, everyone is looking at you now. Okay, what do we do?
Isn't late stage capitalism new?
Well, I mean, you mean you're talking about like the realities of the money shifting into the like the way the people like figuring out how the game works and then sucking all the money up into the like 1% or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's new at all. I just think those people used to.
I mean,
be
it called- definitely happened during the Gilded Age. I used to study the Gilded Age, but then they. They didn't have income tax. So they took, you know, so then they gave income tax. Everyone had to give up all their mansions because there was no way you could have 45 servants and, you know, these like massive homes without having these indentured people working for you for no money and then making all the money to have no income tax. But then every, all this, what's happening now with Silicon Valley is that they just figured out how to, you know, not pay income tax again, but quote, legally. And there's just people whose jobs, people go to college to figure out how to consult people to not have to legally pay income tax.
Well, I mean, income tax used to be called a tithe to the church that you had to do or to your king. I mean, there's always been kings. There's always been queens. There's always been some ruling class that has all the power. And the difference now, I think, in capitalism versus other times is that there's even this sense of like what that we like, that doesn't seem right. If you say that out loud, this seems fucked up. And you're not immediately thrown in a dungeon and tortured on a machine. So I think that's really good. And you know, as far as like, you know, bashing capitalism or whatever, is it capitalism that's fucked up, or is it like what happens when, you know, taxes start going to insane nonsense projects, you know, like the military industrial complex, or, you know what I mean? Where it's like, not only are you having to pay this amount of this thing, but the thing you're paying is either going towards like insanely expensive social programs that don't make any, that like, you know, like how does it cost that much money to put someone in a tiny house? You know what I mean? Where you're looking at like the amount of, like, it's like the health insurance, you know, where you're like, come on, stitches cost 50 grand. Like, what are you fucking talking about? That's obviously bullshit. So I think it's a combination of things. I mean, I'm not denying that like right now we face a series of rotten problems that you could say are relatively new, AI specifically, if you ask me, but.
That's pretty new.
Yeah, that's pretty
Duncan,
new.
Yeah, Duncan, how can you say that's not a threat? That wasn't around during Rome.
No, that was not around during Rome. I mean, but
the fall of, whatever it is.
The fall of Rome. But what I think, you know, within the sort of frenzy that people are getting into these days, you know, a lot of it being generated by, like, on purpose by PR firms who want to, like, fan the flames of this or that, you know, it's to like get people upset. If you get them upset, they'll buy this product over that product. Also with branding, especially, like, you know, people seem to have forgotten that corporations are generally ethically neutral. They just attach themselves to social movements to, like, try to make more money. So, which produces a sense of a consensus that isn't even there. That's about my theory anyway. Can you repeat that?
Corporations are neutral. And so they attach themselves to agendas, but then what?
Yeah, corporations are neutral. They do market analysis to find out what particular demographic isn't buying their product. They figure out what the ethics of that particular modality or whatever the aspects of that particular demographic are. Then they chameleon themselves to seem like that demographic so that buying Charmin doesn't just mean that you want toilet paper. It also means that you don't like oil executives or whatever, you know, like it's right. Branding, you know? So
I know every oil executive has on their Instagram page, like as their main bio, like, we are dedicated to helping the environment.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes into war too. It goes into government. So it's like, you know, it's like, you know, suddenly it's like, wait, why isn't the flag of Ukraine on your Twitter handle? What does that say about you? You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, no matter what, if you put that flag up, you're basically like supporting like weapons manufacturers. There's no way around it. Like you put that flag up and you're like, not only do I support how the freedom of the Ukrainian people and how awful it is that they got invaded by that fucking rotten monster, but also Lockheed Martin, they're a pretty great company. They're doing great things for the world. You know, it just accidentally benefits people who have so much money from killing people. So, you know, and people seem to be forgetting that all of this stuff is being engineered. Like, you know, if you've ever gotten a publicist, you see through the veil of like how it really works. What, you think Lockheed Martin doesn't have publicists? You think the Republican Party doesn't have publicists? The Democrats don't have publicists? You like all Halliburton doesn't have publicists? The cigarette companies don't have public, they all have publicists who like try to like shift social conversations so that people will buy more whatever.
We should just take a year without buying.
Yeah, yes, yes. Just don't fucking buy anything anymore. Everyone, that is our real power. Just stop buying shit. But we disagree with each other. We think we're so different. That's the problem, well, isn't it?
That thing you told me the other day, I can't stop thinking about.
What?
The power versus the compassion.
Oh, right. Power versus compassion. My God, it's such a mess. It's like everyone's all defensive. Don't you think everyone's just so defensive right now, Natasha? Like everyone's just fully on, like, what is it that lunatic said about Kanye? I'm DEFCON 3 or whatever he said. What did he say? DEFCON 3, Kanye losing his fucking mind. Yeah, everyone's on DEFCON 3 or 4. Everyone's like got their like force fields up.
Have you explained that thing before?
No. I don't think I've talked about the compassion versus power thing, but come on. I'm supposed to be interviewing you, Natasha. We've barely even talked about your book. I'm over here rambling. I had too much coffee.
I mean, I just, you know, I like to talk to you whenever, so.
Well,
I'm sorry, am I trying to lead the conversation?
No, I like it. To me, I try to like get underneath all of the stuff that is whirling through my head, that is coming there because of whatever my data sources are that produces a sense of us and them. And so what is the sort of, what are we contending with that's like historically and universally the same? which is old age, disease, and death. If you're in, if you take on human birth, you're going to die. And your kids, if you're lucky, will have to bury you. That's what's really happening. No matter what, that's the thing. Meaning everyone, the idiots giving birth, as you say, or the non-idiots giving birth, the most powerful people or the most impoverished people, what do they have in common? You know, they're all going to die. They're all going to get old. And they all love their kids more than anything in the world. And they all want their kids to be okay. That's what everyone has in common. And their mothers love them so much. That's what everyone has in common. And that's why in Tibetan Buddhism, the way into compassion starts with the mother. By like applying this like cosmology in which we've been reincarnating so long that everyone has been everyone's mother. And so that when you're like get buying food and you see the cashier, instead of just, this is the person who like runs the food through, this was my mom at some point in the vast infinite. And you look at them and you try to see your mom in them. And I know if you have a contentious relationship with your mom, as many do, you still love your fucking mom. You did before you like understood anything. So you plug into that. And then suddenly it's not a them anymore. It's your mom. You know? So that's compassion. But if you don't see that in somebody, suddenly they're an enemy. It's like, oh, these motherfuckers. What the fuck? Why are they wearing a mask? The pandemic's over. Why aren't they wearing a mask? Don't they know the pandemic's not over? You know what I mean? And then you're like, ah, we got to get them. They're going to get us. And then, you know, so that's power versus compassion.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine wanting anyone to do anything, like wanting someone to be a religion, wanting someone to get an abortion or not get an abortion, or wanting to control someone. It's so confusing.
Well, I mean, look, I'm sure you at some point thought to yourself, you know, if I could just make everybody better, then my life would be easier. You know, like if only...
Or certain people better.
Right. Right. You start thinking that, like, my God, why won't that person just act like this? If they acted like that, then I would feel so much better. Because I'm speaking from my own dumb experience, you know, where you're like, especially, you know, when you're in a family, right? And it's easy to think, oh my God, why is she doing that? I just look at that. I can't believe she's doing that. And she might be looking at you going, why are you doing that? What is that? You know, it's so easy in a marriage to like do that. Oh, well, that she's wrong. I'm right. And, you know, I had this wonderful Zen Buddhist teacher on my podcast, and he was like, you just have to start losing more. You like have to lose. You got to start losing. Stop trying to win everything. You know, stop winning.
Have you?
Yes. I love it too. It's the best. It's the biggest relief when you just stop blaming other people for why you're being an asshole. I don't know. You know, that's, to me, that's where compassion really starts, is you're like, it's not their fault. Like if you're being a dick, you're being a dick because you decided to be a dick, you know, not because of like somebody did this or that. Like you chose to be aggressive. It's a choice to be aggressive, if you ask me. That's power. Power and aggression.
But it's also testosterone running through your body and like just instinct, and isn't it?
For
sure. Takes a lot of self-reliance to like to just be like, okay, I'm gonna let myself lose. I mean, with Moshe, my husband, he like is in Facebook argument groups just for sport. He loves arguing, and it's exhausting.
Some people love that. It's like a chess or something. I'm really into this. Like these sayings in Buddhism, the Lojong sayings. There's like. Some of them I remember, some of them I can't. But I shift in my contemplation of them. And currently, the one I think about the most is take all blames into yourself. So that means just stop blaming other people. Take it into yourself. Even if someone around you is being just particularly rotten, stop blaming them for how you're feeling.
Can I tell you one thing, Duncan, before you continue?
Please stop me. I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
This is how women feel all the time.
Wow.
I mean, obviously not every woman, but I'm just saying, that's sometimes terrible. As a woman, you want to you're trying to fight against that because that's just my kid's teacher was like, she keeps saying sorry all the time. Even when she doesn't do anything wrong, she's just saying sorry. Or if she puts her hat on wrong, she's like, sorry. And she's just saying constantly apologizing. And the teacher actually said to me, and she's probably getting it from you. And she's like, do you do that? And I was like, yeah, I must. And I started watching myself. And then I started witnessing my daughter, and we'd be on her bike. And then every time she would not do the brake right, she'd be like, sorry, sorry, sorry. And, it's a very female thing.
Well, that's, this is a little different than that. Taking all the blames into yourself does not mean that if somebody throws a Molotov cocktail into your window, you're like, sorry. Yeah, I threw the Molotov cocktail myself. It doesn't imply passivity in the face of reality, or certainly not pandering or dishonesty, or apologizing when you don't mean it. But it's more along the lines of you're responsible for how you choose to act. No one else is. And that's what you have control over. Nobody else has control over that. So the habitual reactions to stressful situations that are often aggressive, that any human does, you don't have to do that. What happens if you don't? And, as someone who is really habituated himself to being an asshole and being aggressive and thinking anger is a justified means of communication, to sort of wean myself from that addiction, and then to watch the way my life transforms around that is so exciting. That's take all blames into oneself, which is not to say if this person did that or that person did that, they're blameless, so to speak. But if this person does this, and then I am filled with rage, and then I choose to let that rage determine how I react to whatever they did, that's on me, not them. Teen solo hiker who was terrorized for days by unknown figures dressed in white, two cops who quit their job at a local theater because of unexplained encounters with an alleged demon, an isolated forest in Canada where people keep turning up headless. These are just some of the strange, dark, and mysterious stories you'll hear each week on the Mr. Ballin podcast. In each episode, Mr. Ballin shares real-life haunting accounts, like the case of Haley Zega, who disappeared from a hiking trail for 51 hours. When search and rescuers finally found her and asked how she survived, she simply said a friend helped her. She described this friend, 4 years old, black hair, brown eyes. This friend was initially dismissed until they realized a girl had gone missing in that exact spot 23 years earlier and was never found. She was 4 years old. Had black hair and brown eyes. Listen, if you are looking for a fantastic mystery, murder, creep yourself out on a long car ride podcast, this is it for you. This is the stickiest, most addictive murder podcast I have ever encountered. It's freaky. It gives me the creeps every time I listen to it, and I love every second of it. Hey, Prime members, listen to the Amazon Music exclusive podcast, Mr. Ballin Podcast, strange, dark, and mysterious stories in the Amazon Music app. You can download the app today. Again, it's the Mr. Ballin Podcast, strange, dark, and mysterious stories in the Amazon Music app. I'm telling y'all, you're gonna love it. It's hardcore. Thank you, Mr. Ballin. You know, a lot of times.
What about this? What, like, yes. Since the pandemic is over, I've now three times I've found like people just butting in line to me. And also I'm really small. And a lot of times when I'm out, I don't have, you know, I'm like, people probably barely see me. I don't know, but I've definitely seen some egregious like behavior. And as like a small woman, I always want to like stick up for myself and not just let people, you know, cut in front of me just because they're an asshole or a dick or a dude or whatever. Yeah. Like, what do you do in that situation? Do you just like swallow it and just sit back? I mean, I'm sure that's what Jack Kornfeld would do. Well, I'm always like this. Excuse me.
I don't think Jack Kornfeld would do that. I think it's case to case. Some people, when confronted with that situation, might feel a lot of fear inside of them. And because of that fear, they choose to like not speak out. In which case, I don't know if that's good to make your, now they're making fear-based decisions. Mm-hmm. Some people, when that happens, they actually might see that person as their mother in another life, cutting in line in front of them, and and feel all that love and compassion for that person, but still be able to say, excuse me, I think the line starts back there. And there's such a big difference in the reaction you're going to get when you go, hey, the line's back there, versus what the fuck? What's wrong with you? I'm in fucking line. And that's that thing. That's what a lot of people do. And so then when you're cutting in line and someone's like barking at you, now your ego's there. You're like, no, fuck you. And now you're now you're living in New York. But, you know, it's all case to case. But I've just noticed that if like, you know, the more I can like sort of like cool down a little bit, then in those moments of confrontation, if the lower my aggression is, it doesn't mean you don't speak up for yourself, but I've noticed there seems to be a difference in the way people react to me. It's a fun experiment to do, but certainly nothing about passivity here. Nothing about like, oh, just let them cut in front of you. They're just your mom. Don't you want your mom to cut in front of you? Now that's cowardice.
That's all blames to yourself. Okay, I like that.
Take all blames into yourself. That's a good one. Not in a neurotic way, though. I mean, because that's spiritual bypass is what they call it. I mean, it doesn't mean like suddenly like let everyone like shit all over you or whatever. It doesn't mean that at all. You know, it's just like, what's going on? What's your main, like, you don't have to say it on the podcast, but if you had to identify, what is like your main recurring sort of emotional like state that causes you the most trouble? For me, it's anger. Do you have something like that?
I can definitely, you know what it is? Like, I think that it has to do with, you know, just sharing your life with someone. Like, you know, Moshe has a lot of chaos and like, I don't want to be in his chaos, but I have to be in the chaos. And also it's not just him, it's then a kid and that, you know, and it's like, and then I have this feeling, this constant feeling of like, I'm not in control because I don't know where anything is.
Okay.
And my things have been moved and everything's a mess. And I just can't like absorb that and just live my life. Instead, I'm on edge. I don't really know how to describe that feeling though. What would you say that is?
I don't know. Is it like, would you say it's, Is the feeling a hot or cold feeling?
I'd say it's hot.
Okay, so
it gets my blood pressure up.
okay, so it's like this. So it's sort of
like I'll come home and Moshe will spread out as the dog pad, the pee pad for the dogs to pee on, like my brand new monogram towel. Because he's just like, oh, they need to pee on something and we're out of pee pads and he's not paying attention, you know? And so like when something like that happens, I just start to feel, I start to like, my face gets hot. And
okay. So you're mad.
Guess that's anger. Mad, yeah.
You get angry. Yeah, so it's sort of, and then from that anger, you probably like, you know, react to that in some way or another, which is being flavored with that, all that anger, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you know, the idea would be, is there a way to, when you're feeling all that, to look into the situation? Do I have to immediately react to this? Like, is the house about to burn down? Is there like a need right now while I'm fucking pissed to like, to sort of deal with this? And so you can start doing little mini experiments. Like, what happens if you don't? Oh shit, there's the monogram towel. Oh fuck, there's that familiar bitter feeling that summons words out of my mouth that are often not kind. What happens if I don't say anything? What happens? Not repressing. There you go. There you go. You can. Actually, you can. You can. And that's a very exciting thing, but you don't have to. I'm not saying like, don't say anything. Don't. I'm just in my own, from my own personal experiments here. It's like, okay, first I need to get familiar with this feeling, because like, where else have I felt this? How long has it followed me around in my life? Where does it come from? Therapy has helped that a lot with that too. So it's like, where is it? Where is it in my body? What is it? And then when it shows up, then I'll think to myself, these are the causes and conditions from which I have generated lots of bad karma in my life. I remember that. Whenever I'm feeling like this, if I act on it, it never produces good results. And then either I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do it again. Another shot of fucking rage tequila. You know, like, let me get back on the sauce. All right. One more for the road, baby. Or what happens if I don't? What happens if I wait till tomorrow? And then... You know what I mean? Then I wake up in the morning. I'm still annoyed, but not as much as I was before. Or sometimes it doesn't even matter anymore. This thing that seems so fucking, I was so justified. Just who cares? And then all of a sudden I'm living in a different existence, because like the aftershocks from whatever, like from the atomic bomb I launched, the nuclear missile I launched at the person for something they did, which I saw as like worthy of a nuclear bomb. It's like, now I'm not living in radiation, you know? And then that, like, so that's, I think, what he meant by, see what happens if you lose, like experiment a little bit with losing. You've been winning. And how's that working out for you? How's it working out? You know, I mean, is it changing anything? With when you have the confrontation over the monogram towels or the particular like chaos, has it made positive impact in your?
No. No. And it's not just working. Then, well, you did this. Well, you did this. Well, you did this. You know, it's like, then you just get into, you know, the therapist called it whataboutism.
Yep. Right. Now you're going through the role, the like memory, like it's like you've got this like invisible photo album filled with all the flaws of your partner. So it's like you're sort of flipping through like what you're like, it's a terrible game. Well, you did that. Well, but then what about when you did that and you did that, you know? And where does it get you? I mean, that's the main thing to me, is like,
and the thing that doesn't make sense about what about that is like, Moshe wouldn't care if I took his towel and did some, you know, like he doesn't care about the same things I care about. So it's like, it doesn't really even add up to do that.
It does. Exactly. I mean, and it's not to say like, fuck, that's my fucking towel. That means something to me. It might not mean anything to you, but it means something to me. Can you understand that? Like, I'm not saying it's not something worthy of like, you need to like, you can't ignore shit like that either. You can't pretend you're all spiritual or whatever when inside you're a furnace of rage. You'll get sick.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Duncan. Well, Erin's lucky that you're so evolved now.
Well, no, she's not lucky. I'm evolved because I love her so much. And I finally realized, like, Jesus Christ, I've got to get this under control. Like, if I don't figure out a way to calm down, then I could potentially like lose the greatest things in my life. Like it was, you know, but that's a subjective realization, you know, that was not because of anything other than like looking into my like closest like community and seeing like, Jesus, I don't want to make these ripples anymore. Like, it's not working. That's the main thing. It doesn't, if aggression worked to bring peace to the world, mm-hmm. think of the world we'd be living in.
That's think a great of, point.
It just doesn't fucking work. As far as I can tell, it temporarily might work. You can like, you know, you can go fascist. You can like lock people down. You can throw them in your like little personal gulags or whatever. You can isolate them from your love. You can like punish them, get revenge. You can try it and it might temporarily work. But look what happens to dictators. Look how fascists and look at fucking Mussolini with his dick shoved in his mouth hanging upside down. That's where it goes. Hitler in the bunker, you know? I don't know. It just doesn't seem to work for me. Maybe you could be more successful though. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you can execute it better. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like not good at like being in like, you know.
No, you're right. And also you want to model that for your kid.
Exactly.
You don't want to model rage.
Exactly. Exactly. That's it. That's it. You know, it becomes more than just like you. It's like, do you want your kid to like have this as an example of what it looks like to have a like have a disagreement in the world? It's like, well, when you have a disagreement with someone, what you do is you get as angry as you possibly can until that person gets as angry as they possibly can. Then you tell that person all the other shitty things they've done. Then that person tells you all the other shitty things you've done. Then whoever like comes up with the most shitty things, you know, and succeeds in making the other one walk into another room wins. Like that, what? That's not good. That's not good. I mean, I'm working on it, man. I'm nowhere there yet is where I'd like to be, but I think it is possible to not to like cool the anger part down a little bit, you know?
Well, Duncan, you work on yourself more than anyone I know, and you're so insightful. And it's so nice that you share
thanks,
all
Natasha.
That you learn in such a honest way. And this is the only podcast I really listen to regularly. So,
Natasha,
I remember when
we used to
live together, I would follow you around, like trying to like write down some of your analogies.
Oh,
and I just always remember thinking it was such a waste, like because it's like someone should hear everything you have to say. So nice that you're able to do that.
Natasha, isn't it wonderful that it didn't work out for us? Look at this beautiful family. Look at your beautiful kid. Look at our lives. I mean, it's like, and you know, like of all the people in the past that I have had relationships with, you know, like I you're the one I like consider my dear friend. Like I have no animosity towards anybody. I'm not, but you're my friend. And I feel so lucky to be friends with you. I just think you are such a brilliant person, and I'm so happy for you. I'm so impressed that you managed to write this amazing book in the midst of a pandemic. My God, like congratulations. And I, by the way, Endless Honeymoon podcast is brilliant. You guys are
so
funny together.
I love doing the podcast. That is so fun. And it's definitely the favorite thing that I do. And you know, we give relationship advice, even though it seems like we need it too. But, you know, it's also been a great way for me to just sort of hijack Moshe and bring things to him and then let people weigh in. And he has gotten humiliated before because he's very hard to argue with. So he has gotten humiliated before and he like and shamed to the point where he stops doing things. Like he was using my toothbrush for a while, like all the time, like just default, like that was his toothbrush. And I kept saying, don't use my toothbrush. And I would go to use the toothbrush and it'd be soaking wet. And so I mentioned it on the podcast and so many people wrote in and were like, Moshe, that is 100% inexcusable. You should be ashamed. And he has never done it again. It's been like 6 months. So.
Wow. Progress. By the way, every single thing, I just have to put this out there. Every single thing that you're telling me he has done, just know that I'm thinking, oh God, that sounds like something I would do.
Like, no, Aaron texted me and she was like, no. And Aaron even told me that she heard, your wife told me that she heard that, like, her dentist told her you could actually get, like, the gum disease your partner has if they use your toothbrush.
Okay, great. So y'all have been texting about this shit. And you're right, too. You're right, too. And now it all makes sense. Now it all makes sense. Because at some point she came back from the dentist. She had bought me this really nice toothbrush. And the other day.
Wait, you use her toothbrush too?
That's what I'm telling you. That's what I'm telling you. I would do that. I would just grab her. I need a brush. Ah, brush my disgusting old man mouth. Leave the brush wet. And just like wander off to go stink up a room or something. Just disgusting. And she's like, what the fuck? So... Yeah, I mean, just like...
Wait, she told you she came back from the dentist?
And with a new brush. And then the other day, because I've been on the road, I didn't have the brush upstairs. And she's like, where's your toothbrush? I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, it's over. It's over. My relationship with her toothbrush is over. But you know what is so great about your podcast, and what's so cool about you and Moshe, there's millions of things, is how honest you are. And I don't think any couple in the world is going to benefit from some perfect couple and everything's great and all the things. That doesn't help any of us. Like, it's hearing you tell me about the stuff Moshe's doing, taking personal notes, and like, okay, I got to stop doing that. You don't have any monogram towels, but you know what I mean? Like, the general vibe I get. I know why he did that. I understand. It's just a towel. Who gives a fuck? I get it. It's just a towel. Whatever, man. The dog is, we don't want piss on the floor, right? Just grabbed a towel.
I would rather have piss on the floor than on my towel.
I'm trying to help. You know, that's in my mind would be what I was thinking. Doesn't she see? I'm trying to help. I was trying to do something right for once. You know what? I can see why. So, you know, I think that your honesty and his honesty about that, and he's so brilliant and so funny. I think that the way together y'all put that in the world is, I'm sure you already know this, is helping a lot of other couples. You know, it's really helping.
It definitely got me through the pandemic because, like, it's such a crazy thing. Like, in history, have we all had this collective thing before? I don't think that's ever happened.
No, it has not happened.
It's like it really kind of brought people together in a way. Like, didn't matter if you were rich or poor or whatever. It's like single, married, like we all were going through this like level of isolation that it was unprecedented. And, you know, I think that like just starting this podcast and then being able to like talk to people, it was pretty eye-opening.
Oh, yeah. I bet. I mean, it's some of the conversation. Some of the stuff, and on the road too, like some of the conversations you guys have, like some of the stuff people tell you is crazy. That's the other great thing about the podcast is like you're hearing, like, you think shit's weird with your marriage. Like when you're hearing some of the stuff other people are saying, it's like, wow.
I know, it does make you feel better about your life sometimes.
Yes, it does. And I'm so glad y'all are doing it. I hope you never stop. Natasha, thank you so much for giving me this much time. Everybody, please, please order this incredible book. The World Deserves My Children. It's such great writing, and I'm really excited for your next one. Do you have another one planned, or are you like, no fucking
hell right? No. And if you hadn't already signed your deal, I'd try to talk you out of doing yours.
Oh my God, as soon as you, when you said paper shortage, are you kidding? I'm just sitting here thinking like, please God. Let there be another paper shortage. It would be the best day of my life if I was like, look, there's just no paper. Oh, thank you, God.
Are you writing?
Yes, I am. I am writing. Good. It's just not easy. You know that. It's just, but, you know, I'm doing it. I'm scraping through.
It's fun.
Natasha, where can people find you?
Well, go to the Endless Honeymoon Pod. We're on YouTube. We also have a secrets hotline. You can see it all on YouTube and find out where to call. And get my book. You can see it all on my Instagram, Natasha Leggero. And come see me on my book tour. I'll be doing stand-up, reading from my book, doing a Q&A, and also signing the books and meeting you afterwards. I'll be in a few select cities. November 19th, I'll be in Boston. November 20th, D.C. 21st, Philadelphia. 22nd, Nashville. 23rd, Denver. And the 28th, I'll be in Chicago. Tickets at natashalegero.com.
Go see the book tour. Thank you so much, Natasha. Enjoy the rest of your book tour, and hopefully one day y'all make it out to Austin. We can all get dinner or something.
Oh, I'll definitely come out there.
Wonderful. Thank you. Bye. Hare Krishna. Thank you. That was Natasha Legero, everybody. Don't forget to grab that book or the Audible. The World Deserves My Children. Subscribe to her podcast, The Endless Honeymoon Podcast with Moshe Kasher. A tremendous thank you to our sponsors, and a big thank you to you for listening. I will see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.